Schooling is one of the few experiences majority of Americans share. Yet how much do we really know what goes on behind the scene? And what's up with cafeteria lunches? I team up with developmental psychologist David Yeager to explore the personal side of education by speaking with superintendents. I'm Andrew Kim, and I consider myself an accidental superintendent for the past 15 years. So grab your lunch money and welcome to Lunch Duty.
Today at Lunch Duty, we have Dr. Sylvia Ibarra with the Valley View Independent School District down in the region, region one?
Region one. Rio Grande Valley.
Region one. Rio Grande Valley, RGV. That's right. And Sylvia, I really appreciate you joining. I know you're busy. I know there's a lot of things going on. It's also Friday afternoon. But I've been wanting to talk with you, learn from you. And so this is really a treat, an opportunity for me. And I really appreciate it. And for our listeners to know, I think it's all public out there. So let me know if I'm just taking turn here, speaking out of turn. But you are also announced your retirement here shortly, right?
Yes. Yes, first of all, thank you for the invitation. I really appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be here to learn from you as well. I know you're a retired superintendent, but yes, this is my 35th year in education, and so I'm contemplating retirement. I haven't submitted any paperwork, but again, after 35 years, but I'm really seriously considering it. So, and that's okay for you to announce it, because I've been telling people, I just haven't officially announced it or submitted my resignation or my paperwork to TRS, but I'm in the process of doing that.
Okay, well then I definitely spoke out of turn. I know that you and I talked about this.
Yes.
And so, we will have, by the time hopefully when this podcast gets aired, maybe you'll have a more of a firm decision whether you stay further and whether you decided to go ahead and retire. But you know, this is an interesting conversation then. What is your thinking process about retiring? What's driving that? And what's giving you that indication after 35 years? Obviously there's obvious reasons, but what's your thoughts?
No, definitely. That's a valid question. Because as educators, we retire fairly young, and obviously we're not going to retire to just sit at home, because that's not what we do. But after 35 years in education, like I said, and worn different hats, from teacher, counselor, director, principal, assistant superintendent. So I've done a little bit of everything, and I've enjoyed it immensely. But I feel that right now is a good time to stop, take a break for a year, and just reflect on what else is out there, what else I want to do, because I do want to continue to work. Perhaps come back to education after a year, but in a different capacity, or maybe pursue something in the private workforce. But it'll be on my terms. And I really do want to spend more time with my family. My daughter just had a baby, as a matter of fact, her third. So I'm a grandmother for the third time. Yes, very happy. So I have a three-year-old, 1.5-year-old, and now a one-week-old. And so I don't get to see them very much because they live in Temple. And so this will give me a little bit more time to spend with them. And like I said, you know, just slow down for a while, and then come back after that. My daughter tells me that I'll be back in 2 weeks. She says, Mom, there's no way. You have too much energy. You'll be bored in 2 weeks. And I don't believe you're going to stay out for a year. But that's my plan.
But, you know, I think, and I appreciate you sharing that. And I think, but that's the thing, right? I mean, I think those of us who've been in the position of the superintendent, and I don't want to sound like it's so special or unique in any way, but at the same time, the job is not just one thing, but multiple things. And I think that you can only do this job at one speed, which is at warp speed, supersonic speed. And so as a result of that, you do have to make a lot of sacrifices. I think I've seen more of my students' performances than my own kids, for example. And I think that they're the, you know, people always talk to me about balancing life, and I was horrible at it and trying to figure out how to do the job really well. And so I can see in some sense where your daughter is speaking to you in that regard, you know, to spend some more time with them and so forth. And it's just, there's a tug, I think, in many ways.
No, I agree. And I'm like you. When my children, they're now grown, but when they were in school and I was younger, I missed many, many activities, many games and performances. My parents took my place. Thankfully, they were always there to fill in when I couldn't be there. Because like you're saying, I was at my own event as a principal or as an assistant soup or now as a soup. So absolutely, you know, you do make sacrifices. And I regret some of those things that I missed out on. And there's no taking it back. And now, of course, you know, again, now I have the grandchildren in the picture. And so I want to be there for them as much as I can. But also, yeah, like you mentioned, you know, being a superintendent is a fast and furious job. And it's interesting, but I worked at a larger school district where I was an assistant soup, and I had multiple directors under me, and there was a lot of specialty positions, and so dedicated positions. In a small district like Valley View, we don't have that luxury, so we wear many hats, and I'm always working. Just to, you know,
right,
the point, I was out, I called in and took 3 days, but I was working the whole entire time because the work,
right,
doesn't stop. The work doesn't end. And so you have to,
right,
continue whether you're at the office or not. And so, but again, like,
yeah,
you mentioned, people don't realize what the job entails.
Right.
So again, it's just a time just to give, step back a little bit.
Yeah. It's interesting what you say, because, you know, whenever we did have like spring break or Christmas, I couldn't stop working or thinking about the job or getting things prepared. I used to always say that, you know, as a superintendent, I need to be at least a semester ahead of my principals, and principals need to be at least a month ahead of my teachers, and teachers need to be at least a week ahead, exactly, of the students.
Absolutely.
You know, and so you're constantly, not only are you firefighting current things, but you're also a month out, 2 months out, 3 months out in terms of your thinking. Constantly. And I think it just, I don't think, you know, trying to figure that out is very difficult, I think.
And it's so funny you say that, because like my phone is always with me, because I have, it's my little computer. Everything that's on my computer is on my phone. But one of those features that I have is notes, right? So I'll be at home and I remember something, I added to my notes in the middle of the night. Oh my God.
Right.
Just so that I don't forget things. And it's constant. It's like, my goodness, I said, we can never just detach completely,
yeah,
because again, our job doesn't allow it. I mean, we, when you sign up to be a superintendent, you have to know that you're never going to be,
yeah,
it's a 24/7 type of job. And,
yeah,
and that's okay. That's okay. If you're in the right place at the right time, why not? And again,
yeah,
these past 3 years, cause I've only been a superintendent for 3 years, they've been very rewarding. Believe me. I mean, I've enjoyed every minute.
Yeah.
Well, not every minute, but most of it. There are some incidents that I wish, you know, that I could erase. But for the most part, it's been a very rewarding experience. And so I don't regret it. And who knows?
No.
Maybe after a year, I'll come back. I don't know. We'll see.
You can. I know many of our friends, colleagues who are doing that. Let me ask you this. So did you know that going into the job profession that it's going to be 24 hours, 7 days a week? Did you know that? And if you knew that, well, what drove you to that job? I mean, what was the spark in your life, in your career? And I mean, were you growing up as a young, you know, child, you know, saying that, oh, I want to be a superintendent? You know, is that what was it? I mean, how did it come about?
You know,
how did all this come about?
It's so interesting that you asked that, because my goal, to be honest, when I went into education was to be a counselor. I had wonderful, wonderful counselors when I was in school. And so I really wanted to do that. I said, I want to be a counselor and be able to help students. So I knew that I had to teach. And so, yes, I went into teaching. I enjoyed my years as a teacher. I taught for 5 years. And then I went into counseling for 10 years. What happened is
that
I had good mentors and people who always encourage me to keep going for something else. So when I was a counselor, I was a lead counselor, my principal at the time would tell me, you need to be an administrator. You need to go and be an administrator. Go back to school. So he planted that seed. And so I said, you know, you're right. I should, because he would give me a lot of administrative duties. And so I went into principalship. When I was a principal, then I had assistant soups that would tell me, you need to go into administration. You need to go to central office. We need you over there and this and this and that. And I said, you know, I should do that. And so every job I had, there was always someone planting that seed to go to the next level. And when I was assistant soup, same thing. You need to keep going and you need to become a superintendent. So yes, it was in the initial goal, but those were goals that came about as I was in one position and just moving on to the next level. And coming from a bigger district, the work never bothered me because it was a large district and we had to be available 24/7. That's one thing that anybody, director and above, we were told. You got to be available 24/7, weekends, during COVID, it didn't matter. You know, so I knew that coming in, so I was already doing it. And so it was right. A transition. It's from assistant soup to superintendent, obviously it's more responsibility. The work is the same, but the responsibility is much greater.
Was there a certain comment that was made to you by your mentors along the way that that gave you a lot more, oh, wow, I need to do that? Was there something that was said to you that you recall that was more impactful than perhaps other comments?
Yes. You know, when I was a principal in McAllen, and I was a principal there at an elementary school. And back then, back in the day, we used to do executive presentations to the administrative team. It consisted of the superintendent, the assistant soups, and so forth. So they would go to each campus, and so we would present our action plan. And so when they were leaving, one of the assistant soups came up to me, and she says, Sylvia, you need to be a superintendent. And what you're doing here needs to be done at all schools. And so that was very impactful.
Wow.
To me. Yeah. And I said, wow. And then she repeated that to other people, that she was very impressed with the work that I was doing and that I needed to go on to central office. So it really lifted me, obviously. And I said, well, maybe I should go to central office and you know, lead other principals. Why not? And then she continued to tell me that, but other assistant soups also, and the superintendent at the time, you know, hey, go back to school, you know, go get your doctorate. That's when I went actually back to school to get my doctorate, because they also encouraged me, you need to go get your doctorate, you know, keep moving up, keep working hard. I've always had a very strong work ethic, and I think that stands out when people
see
me. And so that's why they encourage me, I'm assuming. So like I said, there's always been people that have encouraged me and have planted that seed. And then I reflect on it. I said, you know, why not? And so, again, comments like that really make a difference, made a difference for me. And I'm sure, you know, for others when they hear those things. So I try to do the same with others, encourage them to also continue to, you know, in their education or their career path.
Yeah. I actually, you know, funny thing is, I actually blame my mentor, a guy named Dr. Ron Kalos, for all my ills and troubles, because he pushed me to this job. And I said, why did you do that? You know, why did you not stop me? Why would you, you know, why would you have me doing this? Oh my gosh.
But you hate me? Right.
I know, right? It's really amazing to hear that you've had all these folks along the way. I encourage you. And, you know, I think, of course, going from the principalship to central office to superintendent, your decision-making style changes over the time period. Right. You know, the decisions that you make as a principal is what is sort of program decisions or routine decisions, perhaps, guided by policy of the district and so forth. At the superintendent level, though, it's a whole unknown frontier. There is no, like, set schedule or a set routine decisions you make. Every decision is uniquely your own. Or do you feel that way, that decisions are different than a principal would make a decision versus a superintendent making a decision?
Well, I agree and disagree, because I think that for one thing, all the decisions that I make are student-centered. In other words, what is the impact on students? Because I always have to put the students first. And I did that when I was a principal, and I also do that now as a superintendent. So sometimes, you know, adults may get upset, whether it be the staff or the parents, but I always place the students first. You know, what do we need to do? And of course, follow the policy, because you're right. If there's policy, it's black and white. You just follow it. It's when there is no policy that you have to create your own administrative regulation or your own systems, that it gets a little tricky. But for the most part, for me, it has been the same. You know, when I was a principal and now that I'm a superintendent, it's always been about students. What I tell my principals now is that I make decisions globally for the entire district, right? Because sometimes they don't agree or they're unhappy with the decision that perhaps I made. But again, I think I have to see the impact on the entire school district globally. And yes, sometimes you have some groups that are unhappy, because that's the challenging part about being an educator, that sometimes you have space situations where one group is going to be unhappy and one group is going to be happy. And unfortunately, you have to do what's in the best interest of most of the students, the majority of the students, if all, preferably. But sometimes you do have situations where one group is unhappy, and but you just got to move forward. And you let policy drive your decision-making, but also what's in the best interest of the students.
You know, and that's really a good comment, and I appreciate you saying that. And of course, just even like, you know, pushing back on a little on that question. And have you thought about like what is your sort of routine and how you go about making the decisions? Like, obviously, you talk about a student first. I'm wondering if there's also like other influences. Is there like a trusted colleague or a obviously your staff, your senior staff, or your cabinet, as we might call it, you know, where do you rely to really give yourselves that, you know, the hardest decisions? I mean, you know, obviously the hardest decisions are the ones that we lose sleep over. You know, how do you go about making that decision work for you?
You know, I think we all need to have someone who we can call a mentor, someone who we trust that's going to be objective, and it's going to give us an unbiased decision, right? So I have two individuals that I call, and they're both former superintendents. And I don't mind saying their name because I respect them very much, and I'm sure a lot of people know them. So whenever I'm you know, just not sure how to proceed with something and I need some advice, I call Dr. King. He's a retired superintendent, very, very experienced. He was my former boss many years ago in a school district. And so
you're talking about Danny King. You're talking about Daniel King.
Daniel King.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the executive director at Region 1 now. And so
he's fantastic. I looked up to him for many, many years.
Yes, and so he's one that I will call whenever I have some questions or I ask him for advice. What would you do? And he always gives me very good advice. And then the other person is Dr. Cavazos, Art Cavazos. I recently started working with him for a short while at Holdsworth. And so he was my mentor there. And so I haven't called him lately, but he was a very good mentor. And so I feel
Art is a great guy.
Yes. So those are two good individuals.
I call him a true gentleman.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So really, I mean, thankfully, I haven't had to call him very often, but the times that I've had to share just concerns or give me some advice, they've come through for me. So those two individuals really are people that I trust and that I know that if I turn to them, they're going to give me some good recommendations, some good advice.
You know, Sylvia, when you talk with Art or Danny, because though, by the way, two fantastic mentors, you're very fortunate. What are you seeking from them? Are you seeking like technical advice or I used to always want some spiritual advice, if that makes sense, almost like a blessing that, you know, I'm going to be okay. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to lead you into that, but what do you look for when you are seeking some advice?
All of the above. It depends, right? It depends. Sometimes you need technical advice. Sometimes you need spiritual advice, just someone to cry with, like vent, because as you know, being a superintendent, I mean, we have to be very careful and we can't, you know, even here within our district, we have our subordinates and our trusted team to get the work done. But we also have to be very careful what we say, sometimes, you know, we have political challenges. And so it's just best to keep it out of the school district. And when you go outside with someone who you trust, you know, they're not going to, they don't have any contact here. It's just best. It's been my experience. But yeah, I mean, I've called them, like I said, not often. I mean, maybe like two or three times throughout the past 3 years for different situations. And sometimes, you feel down and yes, you know, lean on your faith. And so they'll tell me, it's like, you know, it's going to be okay. You know, but a lot of times it's just advice. I want to know, how would you handle this situation? Did you ever experience something like this? And I mean, both of them were superintendent for years. And so, they experienced everything. So well, this is what I did. This is what I recommend, you know.
Right.
So,
right.
Because they were in the profession for so long, they have so many experiences that they can share with others that haven't been in the profession as long as them.
Yeah. Fantastic. It really is. And I remember, I will admit that I think I have cried in front of my mentor just because the job was so hard. I remember that my first few years when I first began. Mm-hmm. So I definitely, resonate with you on that. You know, when you talked about earlier about, you know, different groups trying to make a decision that benefits all kids, but at the same time, you recognize that there are, unfortunately, multiple groups. Do you think that, you know, in your experience so far, you've seen a change in those groups? I mean, has it gotten harder to figure that out, or is it, do you think it's more easier because they're more announced in some sense? I don't know. What's your thoughts? I think it's just, I don't know. Let me hear your talk about that.
Well, you know, I think that when you have different interest groups and they're passionate about their whatever it is that they're advocating for, it's very meaningful to them. And I think that if I as a superintendent show them, and first of all, listen to them. So I always try to give time to the different groups, whether it be parents or whether it be students or whether it be, you know, employees, hear them out, first of all. But then what has worked for me is talking to them and explaining why sometimes we make the decisions that we make. So for instance, you know, if we don't give a raise, and I have the teacher organizations here with me, I sit down and I take the time to explain budget and the constraints and the challenges that we're facing. And so explaining to them and just letting them know that we're working very hard to give them a raise, but this is why we can't, but this is what we're going to do instead, you know? And so always talking to them and explaining the why has worked for me. That it doesn't always work, but I think they appreciate for the most part when you take the time, because it's okay, now we understand. And so then they become your voice, they become your advocate with others, because they know it's not that she doesn't want to, this is the reason why, but she's gonna try this or that, you know. And I talk about the raise, because the raise, you know, everybody wants a raise, and understandably so, you know, with cost of living and so forth. So in our school district, that was the point of contention. So we gave them ESSER bonuses, you know, for 2-3 years, and they were happy.
Yep.
Now, and we said, we're going to work towards getting the raise. And so that's what the board and I are working on. So that, because we do understand that there is a real need, and that's our goal. At the end of the day, we want to take care of our staff. But when you don't give them the time and you don't explain why, they get upset, right? And so then you lose it.
Yep.
So that has always worked for me. Just listening to them and then telling them the why and giving them the details and a good explanation. And then they're, for the most part, they're okay.
Yeah. So, you know, as you think about certainly now in the future, is there a certain decision that you thought that, you know, gosh, I wish if you had a do-over, you know, is there a certain do-over when you're in your career? I mean, I certainly have a lot of do-overs, but what's your do-overs if you have any?
Oh my goodness, I'm sure we all have them. I think one do-over is just open communication and communicate, you know, just to keep people informed. I think that they don't like to be surprised. And so there were, you know, situations probably in my career where I didn't effectively communicate or in a timely manner and so forth. So, you know, that comes back to bite us. So, yes, I think that that's the one thing now, with more experience, is send out the communication, let them know what's happening, so that get ahead of it, in other words, with everybody, all the stakeholders. Because, you know, if you take, for instance, safety, you know, parents want to know immediately if there's a safety concern. Yes. As soon as it happens, it has to be timely, and it has to be out there in multiple ways, whether it's social media, emails to parents, texts, and so forth. And if you tell them, they understand. And the more details, I mean, you can't give them everything, but the more information that you can provide, the better. Because when you don't do it, you start seeing it. They're never told, they're hiding things.
And
So that's one lesson that I learned, like, give them the information as quickly as possible, so that so they don't make up something, or they don't create their own story, right? Because then they make up things that are not true. So,
which goes back to what we said earlier, that the job is 24 hours, 7 days a week. As a result of that, recently I had the pleasure of having on our podcast two female superintendents who are, by the way, twin sisters.
Wow.
And they're superintendents here in Texas, in small, in rural districts in Texas. And you can listen to that episode. But they were talking, shared a lot about, as female superintendents, first of all, how difficult it was for them to become superintendents coming out of West Texas. They weren't critical, but they were very, they recognized and understood that they had an uphill challenge. And they're both, of course, are superintendents today, doing great jobs. Have you had that same experience, you think, in terms of, like, as a female superintendent? Obviously, we know the numbers, percentage, at least in the state of Texas, are low. And the fact that here you are, doing a great job, coming out of a big system in a smaller district than what you're used to. What's the status of your view on that, in terms of obviously promoting others, especially female superintendents?
I think it's wonderful that we're seeing more female superintendents. It's now, because I'm part of a group, I don't even remember the name of it, but it's all female superintendents. And every time that a new female superintendent gets named, we all celebrate it. And there's like 200, over 200 now, in a, out of 1,200. So we're still in the minority. Right. So I'm glad that more and more female superintendents are coming up to leadership of a superintendent position. Because, I mean, why not? I don't know why it took so long, to be honest with you. I'm glad I really didn't face any challenges. I did, prior to this job, I did apply in two other school districts, and I was a finalist, and the individuals who got the position were male. So I don't know if it means anything, but I think that boards are now more open-minded, and because female superintendents are doing very well for the most part, I think there's trust, and they're more open to hiring female superintendents. So I really don't think that's an issue anymore. At least I hope not. But I'm definitely always supporting and cheering on female superintendents, or any administrator going up the ladder. And actually, we're very happy here in our school district, because my two assistant superintendents just recently finished their doctoral program. So we're very happy because the administrative team, all of us have doctorates now. And so they're also wanting to become female superintendent. And I'm sure they will. They're very, both of them are very intelligent ladies, very, very capable. So I think we'll see more and more superintendents. So personally, I haven't experienced, I don't think so, anyone saying, no, we're not going to hire you because you're a female. I think that our work speaks for us. And I would encourage females in leadership roles to pursue it and let their work speak for them, because they're doing great things.
Yeah.
Assistant soups and as directors, and as long as they have that to show for them, then they'll be fine.
It's interesting you point out something that perhaps the rest of the public may not know, is that school boards do the hiring of superintendents, and you have typically seven or more, in some cases, school board members. And as elected officials, obviously they're a reflection of their community, the values of the community, and so forth. So you're not just doing an interview with one person, one boss. You've got an interview with seven bosses with equal say-so. And that's a very difficult thing to do.
Absolutely, absolutely. And sometimes they don't all agree. You know, I think that's the biggest challenge for school boards, that they don't agree. They want different things, which is normal. I mean, they're entitled to their opinion. And so, but because there are seven, during executive sessions, that's where the magic happens, as they say, because they have their discussions and they try to sway each other back and forth. And my role is really just to present the information. I'm objective and I stay with it and let them decide, but I do present the information. Here it is. And then they make the final decision. But yeah, I think that many people don't realize that a lot of times they don't agree. And sometimes there is even some conflict because they want certain things and it doesn't go their way and so forth. But I think at the end of the day, most school boards are in it for the right reasons, which is, to do things good for kids. So as long as we have that, I think we should be okay.
Yeah. So our podcast is called Lunch Duty because I think that any administrator or educator, for that matter, teacher, we've all done our time as in lunch duties.
Totally.
And I'm sure you have as well. And and, it's one of those unknown stories that we all do. So is there one that sticks in your mind, a particular lunch duty story, a lunch duty event that occurred that you just was like, oh, my gosh. I mean, maybe not the inappropriate ones in some sense, maybe. But is there any one incident in the past or event that you could remember that you can share with all of us?
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, lunch duty was always fun. And eventful. The kids enjoy lunch duty and at their time to talk and so forth. And administrators are the last ones to eat, if they even eat, because sometimes you don't. And so they're always eating 1:30, 2 o'clock. You know, poor thing. That's the life of a school principal or an assistant principal. But I do recall one time that we had a fire drill, and it was unannounced. I mean, something happened. The fire alarm went off, and the cafeteria was full of kids. So of course we had to take out all the kids, take them out to the playground, and then we all came back and I said, oh my God, they're not gonna know where to sit. They all came back to exactly their same spot and continued to eat. I was more worried than they were. I'm like, oh, okay, this is not an issue. So my concern was they're not gonna eat their food, and now we're gonna have to serve them again. But that was not a good time, obviously, to have a fire drill because, again, we're feeding 300, 400 kids in the cafeteria at a time. But no, it worked out fine. So that stands out.
And that is funny. No,
day to day.
You know what? That is, it's making me smile and laugh because you're exactly right. Kids know exactly where they're going to go back to, in the cafeteria, where they sit. Exactly, right?
Yeah,
you're
maybe
right about that.
Maybe the food was
so
colder
true.
By then, but it didn't bother them. So,
it never did. You're right. You're so, that is a very, very, really good observation. And it's making me smile because I've seen that myself. And
right. I do want to share one other story. When I was a student, back in the day, we used to have food fight. I don't know if you ever experienced one of those, but
oh my God.
I mean, those food fight, and I always prayed, hope that I never have a food fight. I never did. Thank God. I think that happens more at the secondary. But when I was a student in high school, there were food fights all the time, and it was such a mess. So I think we're past that.
I
don't know about those things anymore. Thank God. But
me too. I was a middle school principal in Dallas ISD years ago, and we have that's middle school, which is a great middle school. Mm-hmm. But they were known to have food fights. And I remember when it occurred, I was so upset. Mm-hmm. I was so upset because, just wasteful food. And also all the custodial staff had to do all the cleanup. And I was like, so I actually made all the students stay behind and clean the cafeteria. Man, I was so not happy about that. But you're right. I'm going to knock on wood because you don't really hear about food fights anymore. You know what I mean? So hopefully that doesn't come back.
That's true. So we better keep it very quiet. Don't let too many people hear us. Yeah.
Well, Sylvia, I've taken up a lot of your time. I know you're busy. Are you guys getting ready for the solar eclipse that's going to take place here?
Yes, we're very excited. We're not getting a full eclipse. We have a partial eclipse, but we're still taking time to allow all our students, all our staff go out there and experience this magnificent event. So we're looking forward to it. We have all everything squared away. Permission slips have been fine and glasses have been ordered. So it'll be exciting for us. I'm sure that you're going to see it even, you know, at another level. So I'm sure you're going to have a lot of fun up there in Austin as well.
Yeah, we're supposed to have a full eclipse, and the weather looks like it's going to be pretty good. So we'll see how it goes on Monday. I'm going to go grab all the water and all different things. I'm sure there's a pandemonium at the grocery stores. But
good luck.
Listen, I appreciate your time. I think I told you this some time ago when we first met that I've always been a fan of Valley View ISD. You guys always do well in growth data, the performance of growing students and performance. And so I always wanted to kind of just almost camp myself down there and see what you do on a day-to-day basis that makes that work.
You're more than welcome to come anytime.
Yep.
I'm really proud of my school district where we are doing some great things, instructionally speaking. So anytime you want to come down and just, visit our classrooms and learn about our instructional practice, I'll be happy to share. But thank you so much again for giving me this opportunity to share a little bit about myself. It was a lot of fun. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, no. And once again, I appreciate it very much. And if there's anything I can, do for you, just always give me a call. All right. All right. Thanks for joining. You take care. All right. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
Lunch Duty is produced by David Yeager and me, Andrew Kim. We thank the Lates Development Studio and the Texas Behavioral Science and Policy Institute at the University of Texas at Austin for their support. Thank you for listening, and please join us for our next episode of Lunch Duty.